We'll continue reading from Urgyen Rinpoche's collection of sayings called Vajra Speech. This one is from the section on Buddha. It is important to transcend both limitations of existence and peace. Neither resting in nirvanic peace nor straying into samsaric existence. Buddha means being liberated both from existence and from peace. Now that's very odd, isn't it? Why would the Buddha want to be liberated from peace? Who has an idea?
It reminds me of some fixation that you were speaking of. Still a form of attachment if you're holding on to the peace. Why is to let go?
Very good. Excellent answer. Anyone else?
There's still a sense of individuality.
Also an excellent answer. You know, it's interesting. One of Lacan's most important aphorisms was that the word is the murder of the thing. But I think in a way he got it backward. If you go back to Taoism, the Taoists said that the word only came into existence after the thing was lost. So the concept of virtue and goodness and peace, all of that came after they were lost. So the word is, in a way, a memorial to what no longer is, but can only be symbolized. And so once you return to the real, there's no longer a symbol. You're beyond any differentiation, and therefore there's no difference between peace and existence, nirvana and samsara. There's no difference in any state because there's no longer an ego. There's no longer an I thought. There is only the pure continuum of presence. So the ultimate liberation is liberation from liberation itself. The qualities of an enlightened Buddha are not his qualities, let's say his or her qualities. They are the qualities of the Buddha nature, fully manifest. We also possess that same potential, but it is hidden, lying dormant. So the Buddha has no qualities. The Buddha is nirgun, without qualities. But the Buddha nature has qualities, satchitananda. And yet, those qualities are still limited symbolizations of the real Buddha nature that cannot be symbolized. And if one is stuck with the symbols, it means one has still not refound what is lost within oneself. And then there is no distinction between the Buddha and the Buddha nature, and qualities or qualitylessness. The real Buddha is the nature of our mind. Right now, our Buddha nature is covered by obscurations that we need to purify. We also need to gather the two accumulations of merit and wisdom. A practice in which we think that the Buddha is outside of ourselves, while ignoring the Buddha within, will never bring complete enlightenment. So you are not to pray to a Buddha or a god or a goddess or a Brahman or any deity, figure, or symbol, because it's what you are. And as long as you're in that mode of using signifiers to try to reach the signified, then you're in a state in which Buddhahood is impossible to know. So if we expect an external Buddha up there in the sky to give us all the supreme accomplishments, we are merely placing our hopes in an illusory outer object. The ultimate deity is within our own mind. Interesting that a Buddhist uses the word deity, because most people think Buddhism is without a deity, but the Buddha nature is indeed God. The ultimate deity is within our own mind. We attain enlightenment by recognizing our true nature and training in that recognition. All right, so the training that we are doing every time we meditate, and hopefully every minute of wakeful presence, is the recognition of Buddhahood as oneself. Wordlessly, because the word murders the thing. But the thing is what we are. There is only one Buddhahood, one awakened state, one ultimate destination. The true essence of Buddhahood is undivided, empty cognizance, suffused with knowing. This is also the basic nature of your own mind, the undivided, empty cognizance, suffused with knowing. Is the same for a follower of any school of Buddhism, Sakya, Gelug, Nyingma, or Kagyu. They all have to enter the same path to enlightenment. Various types of enlightenment do not exist, only different words with the same meaning. Now, I wish he would have expanded that to say, that's true of all spiritual traditions, not just the Buddhist lineages. That's true whether you're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Taoist, Hindu, or any other. All of them are different words for the same ultimate truth that can only be reached when you have gone beyond words. There's a difference between being deluded and undeluded, between recognizing and not recognizing our nature. Although we have the essence of Buddhahood within us, it may be temporarily obscured. The primordially unmistaken quality is called enlightenment, Buddhahood. The awakened state of Dharmakaya. The primordially deluded aspect is called ignorance, the deluded experience of sentient beings. Why is it temporarily obscured? Why is it that your Buddhahood is not completely obvious to you? Why is it that even after studying these concepts very clearly, that there isn't complete recognition of your true nature? What is the obstacle? Does anyone have an obstacle still, or are you all free of obstacles? If you have an obstacle, what is it really? The ego, but why hold on to an ego if it's an obstacle to your own bliss? That'll be your koan for the day.
Mm-hmm. A false sense of safety from loyalty to the false?
Loyalty to the false. Did it give you safety in this life? No.
The delusion.
Mm-hmm. But you're not deluded anymore. So why would there still be a trace of that loyalty, which is a disloyalty to your real self? That's your koan for the day.
Mm-hmm. It looks, from the perspective of the ego, it looks the other way around. From where I'm sitting, the ego is real. The matter is real. And the real self feels unattainable, unknown, unreal, beyond.
Is that the truth for you?
In this moment, I think I know this, and I call it certain things.
But who is the I that knows this? Do you know the I? No, see, the reason you know this and not the self is that you're focusing on this rather than focusing on who am I. And then you are the Buddha. So there's a choice to externalize your attention rather than to return to the self and to abide in the center of your being. So you consciousness will make real whatever it pays attention to. If you pay attention to the self, that's real, and the rest is an illusion or just a manifestation of the self. If you pay attention to the multiplicity, then the oneness is an illusion. So then the question is, why would you pay attention to the multiplicity that is the cause of suffering rather than the unity that's the salvation? That's your go on for the day.
It seems like it's a lack of practice. Like
say louder, please.
That it's all about the practice of removing from the multiplicity into the oneness. And the more one practices, the stronger it becomes, and the weaker the other becomes.
That's true. Are you practicing all the time?
I'm trying.
Constantly. What's the obstacle?
Mm-hmm.
And why is there an ego that has to try? Because the ego is the obstacle to the realization, right? See, the ego is an object in your mind, a mental object that makes the physical multiplicity seem real. But who is the subject of that object? Then you get into the purity of consciousness. And then you go beyond even the subject, because subject only exists as long as there's an object. Once you have gone into non-duality, then there's no obstacle, right?
And there's no language, and there's still such a stuckness in the frame of the word murdering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So to get back to the real, then, you have to stop the addiction to words,
yes.
Right? Because they continue the illusion. So it's mental chatter then that's the problem, the addiction to the mental movements that externalize consciousness. Right? So your koan is, how do I remember not to use words, right? Without using a word to remember that.
That's a lot of words.
That's right. But who you are is already free. So just by remembering that, you're complete, you're Buddha. Okay. The awakened state is free of thought, yet vividly awake. If we train in this steadily, it becomes the fully awakened state of Buddhahood. I'll read from the section on cognizance. The real meaning of luminosity is a lucid knowing. It is awareness free from darkness. This does not involve intellectualizing, as one's awareness is cognizant from the beginning. Cognizant self-awareness is beyond conceptual mind. Okay? In thought-free awareness, fixation on both subject and object have collapsed. Cognizance, however, does not cease. So in the same way that some people who want to read a lot of books practice speed reading. And what speed reading is looking at the word without sounding it in your mind, being able to recognize its meaning and continue on and take in that meaning without subvocally having to speak it to yourself. It takes practice and training to be able to do that without losing comprehension. But once one can do that, then one is no longer limited in the amount of text one can take in, and gradually one can take in larger and larger blocks of figures and be able to turn them into understanding without the intermediary of the linear vocalization of each syllable. So in the same way, through our training, we are able to take in the meaning of reality, because all of this is made of signs. The whole world is language. It's a text. And once you have returned to the state of the cognizance that is natural to us, then there's an instantaneous knowing that is in accord with the real, because it is one with the real, because the real is not dual. And the text that you're reading is a text that you're actually projecting. And therefore, it is not a matter of having to learn from experience any longer, but be able to give to experience that which is recollected from one's knowledge of past, present, and future, which are all here now, always. And therefore, there's an entirely different mode of being that does not come from taking from the external and trying to turn that into sense, but being able to project upon the world that is one's projection, a grid of knowing that comes from the very archetypal source of the intelligence that has brought about the manifestation. And there is no longer a sense of a someone having to learn something from some experience or some book or some person. And there is always a knowing that is in accord with the real, because it is in total resonance with the real. And what is real within is real without. There are not two reals. There are not two selves. And it's that non-duality that comes from the return to the source of all knowledge that enables one to transcend language and thought and the ego's need to process. And then everything is clear instantaneously in every moment that it arises, and there is mastery of a situation without struggle and freedom from any sense of inadequacy that the ego always has, because it's always one step behind. The ego is never in time. It's always one step late in getting it. But the self is knowing and has no loss of perfect stride with the unfoldment of reality. because all of time is present, and all knowledge is present, and all grace is present. And it's that freedom from the struggle to try to get it, to understand, to activate one's functions of thinking and feeling and intuiting, because all of those functions are already expanded to their infinite dimensionality, that creates peace and freedom from the need to hold on to peace or to existence or to transcend, because one is already in union with all that is and all that is unmanifest. So may you continue to train in that realization that no training is needed, because all knowledge is already yours when you realize who you are. May you be blessed with the peace that comes from surrender to the Buddha nature and dissolving any sense of separation or difference. And may you know the deeper peace of always eternally being that ultimate presence that is changeless, neither in nirvana nor samsara, but in both and beyond. And may you know the supreme, absolute peace beyond all words or descriptions, but available to all who return to our original, eternal, true nature with love.